Computer.
And food in my teeth.
Kathy's got food in her teeth. Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio.
Hi, everybody. Happy Friday.
This is Zen Talk number 35? I don't know. 34, 35,
Todd, like Todd likes to have numbers.
I do. I'm a numbers guy. And there might be some new people on here. So we mute everybody at the beginning. And then if you have a question, you could either raise your hand, like physically raise it so we can see your hand, or you can put it in the chat box. So there's a few different ways of letting you know that you have a question. Oh, somebody just got unmuted. How'd that happen?
It's fine.
So I have a few questions, not many. So I'm hoping that you guys have some things that you're working on that you can use some support.
Right? Well, if you have a question, just let us know. Otherwise, we will answer the questions that we got.
So I want to say hi to Helen, Lindsay, Emily, Peggy, Kimmy, Millie, Jennifer. Hey, Jennifer's back. Hi, Jennifer.
Sarah.
Sarah, and then the 979 area code and the 650 area code. I can't see who those people are. So I'm going to read the first question, and then for those of you guys who want to ask a question, raise your hand, and then we'll go to you next. You ready, sweetie?
Mm-hmm.
Sweetie's never heard this question before.
I basically just walked in the door, so I'm...
You just walked in the door.
I'm going in that
way. Real quick question. Sarah says she doesn't have a webcam and I can't use my audio in my open office.
That's no worries. Okay. No, no worries. No. Whatever way you can get in is fine.
So this is from a man.
Okay.
He has a daughter who's I think she's just over a year old.
Okay.
Okay. And she's in nursery 23 hours a week over 3 days.
Okay.
So about 8 hours a day. She's been going to the nursery since January when she turned one, and her mom, this man,
I'm wondering if he's from, not from, where is
he? He's from England.
England, I love it.
He's English.
I can tell just calling it nursery.
I forgot the microphone. Gosh darn it. Read this question
okay.
While I get the microphone.
You'll be able to hear us once Todd gets the microphone. She's been going to the nursery since January when she turned one and her mom went back to work. It took her a while to settle, like all kids that age, but seems happy there now. However, her being at nursery makes us financially worse off than if I didn't work and looked after her instead. Yeah, I hear that a lot. Not only this, but I believe I'd be happier doing this, and I think she might be too. We love spending time together, and I would take her to classes and play groups, etc. However, my wife thinks that Olive benefits, that's their daughter's name, Olive, that's pretty... from nursery, and that she's better off at nursery for these hours than she would be with me. Perhaps she is right, but I'm not so sure. I think it's 16 months. She doesn't stand to gain that much from being in a nursery and would perhaps be better with a parent. The way I see it is that most people have their child in nursery because they feel like they have to, but we are fortunate enough to not have to. So I'm questioning why we are. We are actually financially off, you know, but okay. To simplify the question, is a 16-year-old better off at a nursery or with her parent? I will answer that in a second.
That is a tough question.
Well, it's actually not.
Oh, it's not?
No, it's not tough. It's challenging for the for a decision making process. But I think that everybody can hear me, right? You guys can still hear me? Okay. So, really, what's nice about this is you get to decide. There is no magic formula where that if a child is in a daycare or nursery or at school that they're actually going to be better off. There's nothing true about that. It also isn't true that if a child is in daycare or nursery that they'll be worse off. Neither is true. But I do believe that if you were to put those things as completely even, I do think that a child and a parent benefits a lot from being together. And I think that bonding and finding that kind of companionship, and I'm calling it companionship, not like as a substitute for peer, you know, for your partner companionship, but meaning I think a lot happens when we get to spend one-on-one time with our kids. I think it's wonderful for both parties. So in no way am I saying that she's being hurt by being in nursery or in daycare. That's not true. But I think if you want to stay home and it's better financially, and if all your wife needs to hear is that she's just as you know, will do just as well with you, then I can offer that. Because I think that one of the things that I'm most happy about, and I still always worked part-time, but I'm so glad that I was able to be with the girls when they were little. That's just a... you know, and again, I have a lot of friends who didn't do that and they're very content with their decision. There's no, this is not about judgment or saying there's one way that's right. It's just about you.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. While at the same time, I do feel like there needs to be a discussion between husband and wife.
Of course.
In this regard. So I would start with that is, you know, isn't there something in the question that says that the wife said that she might be better off being in...
Right. But, and that's why I was offering the, if his wife really believes that there's some kind of statistical information that points toward her daughter being better in nursery, I don't know any research like that. But if it's her being more concerned about something else, mm-hmm. then that necessitates a conversation.
Right. Yeah, like you said, of all things being equal, it's funny. Like I have friends who have had the financial ability to be with their kids when they're really young, but chosen to work instead. And this is my own judgment. This is my own bias. This is me, Todd, wearing his judgment hat. My take is always like, if you can be with your kid, that, you know, if you're going to have the kid, and don't let a nanny or something do the most amount of caretaking over the formative years of their life. But like I said, that's just my
well,
judgment.
And that's if you can, because the, and again, I know you said that, but I'm just reiterating because that's not possible for a lot of people.
Right.
So that's not,
and that's why I started it. These are my wealthy friends.
Right.
Who don't, you know, they already live in a big fat house.
But then there's also the point that I want to make that you, let's take socioeconomic status out of it. Some parents find that they do better as a parent if they are working. Mm-hmm. And that is a real thing. And that's not something to be ashamed of, or that's not something to judge yourself over. If you feel like I don't do well staying at home full time or even part time, and I need to work because then I can come home and be the best parent I can be, that's your place. So
yes, but in this specific situation, mm-hmm. we do have a parent that wants to be home.
Right. And so that's why, and you and I are totally on the same page about this. If it really is just, you know, basically mom, they both want this, but mom's saying, no, Olive will be better in nursery. I can say that I don't know any research that points to that.
Yeah. And I would say if I'm the husband, say, help me understand that.
Yeah. And that's the conversation is let's really dig into this because, you know, there's a lot of pieces to that. And I think that a lot of moms can relate. I don't know this to be true for Olive's mom. So I'm making this up. Olive's mom, this is not about you, but I think there's a lot of moms who feel like that's something they would like to do. Or if the dad does that, then they're going to feel left out. Mm-hmm. Or that's something that they do want to work, but they also don't want dad to stay home because then the dad is doing the part that they wish that, you know, it can be emotionally complicated. Mm-hmm. And my best thing I can offer for everybody regarding whatever it is be honest. Mm-hmm. Don't play with things that have nothing to do with what you're really concerned about. Mm-hmm. You know, don't bring up examples that, you know, aren't really the heart of what you believe. And you know what? It's really vulnerable to say something like, I don't want you to stay home because you might be more attached to the baby than I am, or the baby might go to you more than me. That's a really honest and vulnerable thing to say, but
especially
it's
if it's the mom going to work and the dad
exactly.
staying with the baby.
Exactly. That's hard. But if that's the truth, then that's the only thing that needs to be said. You know, we try and beat around the bush with other stuff, but really,
do you want to know what Emily said? Hmm. She says, I've been home for 2.5 years with my daughter. I've loved it, but I'm missing my professional work like, badly. Mm-hmm. And my guess is if Emily stayed working, she would be like, I've been working for 2.5 years and I miss my daughter badly. It's one of those things like you just can't really win.
Yeah. And you're not supposed to. I think one of the things that we often believe, especially when our kids are little, is we'll say to ourselves, I'm not doing it right. And I need to figure out how to do this right. So every day I feel content in my decision. And as you guys know, I'll be a broken record. Life is paradox and life is contrast. And some days you're happy you're home and some days you're sad you're home. And then vice versa. Some days you're working and you're like, I'm so glad I'm working. I feel so fulfilled. And then you get a phone call that your child's sick and you're like, I wish I didn't have to work. That's contrast. That's kind of the way of things. And I think when we believe that there's one way and that we're doing it wrong, that's where shame comes in. and we start judging ourselves, and we have a lack of compassion for the fact that everybody's kind of in the same boat. And, you know.
Sweetie, that's the elusiveness of happiness. It's a moving target. Mm-hmm. So just be happy with the discomfort of being challenged in any situation that you're in.
Yeah. And if you can't be happy with it, because that's kind of a tall order, trust that you're not alone. Mm-hmm. You know, to be in pain and then say, well, I'm going to be happy about it is tough. But to be struggling or to be confused and then say, well, I am in a very common confusion.
Yeah. Do you want to know what Sarah said, sweetie? Mm-hmm. Sarah said, I realized early on that the only way I would survive is to work.
Yeah. That's what
I don't have a difficult or compelling job, but I do feel like I am better than I am at parenting or coming up with the things to do with a toddler. Mm-hmm. What I will say to the man who wrote this in is, this probably isn't going to come out right, but it's not easy. I haven't done it. Kathy's been the dominant caretaker for all 15 years that we've been parents. I've had little glimpses of it.
Well, little glimpses of meaning being in charge.
Yeah, I'm in charge for a weekend, but the day-to-day grind, mm-hmm. and I'm sure there's a lot of women that are on this call able to speak to that.
And then that's the thing, too, is that if it is hard, then we think we're not cut out for it, and that's not necessarily true either. And I think what Sarah brings up is important. We got to kind of figure out who we are and where we thrive and then work in that environment. And sometimes that means being home full time. And sometimes that means going part time, which is what I figured out I needed to do. And sometimes it's going full time. And that's fine. You know, I was listening to an old interview today with Glennon Doyle. And it's an old one. It's from
Who's Glennon Doyle, sweetie?
They know who Glennon is.
No.
Yes,
no,
they do.
They don't.
Look at them nod. They're like, yes.
That guy doesn't.
Oh,
doesn't.
Dave. Okay, see? Dave. All right, Dave. Glennon Doyle is an author. She wrote Love Warrior. She wrote Carry On Warrior. And she has a blog. And more than a blog, she has a very big presence. And she also runs Together Rising, which raises money for issues that we're dealing with in our society. She's an activist. Anyway. Glennon, old interview with her, and she was talking about, you know, her experiences when she was young, and, you know, the belief systems that she was brought up with, about what it means to be a girl and a woman, and, you know, how it's a lot external, and we get really separated from our own bodies, and we get really separated from ourselves, and we end up growing up and blaming ourselves for that. But really what's happened is we've marinated in it our whole life, as we have to talk about that thing last night.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. We have, marinated is the word that she used, but Glennon used the word we've been poisoned. We've been poisoned to believe that women are supposed to be the constant caregivers and they're supposed to love being around all the time and that they're supposed to, you know, take care of everything and do the emotional labor. And we've been poisoned, and it doesn't mean that those things are bad and women shouldn't do them, because some women really want to and they want to do that full time. But there's a belief system that if we don't do them or we need a break from them, then there's something wrong with us. That's the poisoning, or that's the shame that we carry. And so we have to find a recognition that whoever we are and whatever makes us feel most comfortable and content is okay. And also, as my friend Rita would always say, just throw the word now at the end of the sentence. This is what makes me feel comfortable and content now. And it doesn't have to be forever. It doesn't have to be next year. It doesn't have to be 6 months from now. Just right now, this is what I need to do. I need to work, or I need to stay home, or I need to give this a try, or I need to move, or I need to stay here now. So anyway,
We're going to go over to Helen, who has a question. I'm going to try to unmute her. Let me see if this works. Hold on. Bear with us.
Why are we so big on your computer?
Because we're awesome.
Are we big like that on everyone's computer?
I don't know.
It's unfortunate.
Unmute.
So large.
Helen, can you hear me? No, not yet.
Hello?
Well, there you are. Hi, Helen. Can you hear me?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. What's your question?
Yeah, my question is, could you talk a little bit about the difference between empathic distress versus empathic concern? Hmm. Because these are terms which I learned recently, and it really helped me, because before when I had my child, which was 8 years ago now, I had a big experience of I couldn't stand anything that like when I was watching other people suffer, even on the news or just stories or just thinking about things, then I really couldn't tolerate it at all. And I just recently learned that that's empathic distress, that reaction of overwhelm. And you just need to run away because you can't cope with it. And then you feel worse because you just feel awful because you couldn't stand somebody else's suffering. And instead of helping them, you just turned away. So, and then the ideal is empathic concern, which is motivates actually doing something. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, perfect.
Coming in great.
I can hear everything you're saying and I can relate. Helen, yeah.
Okay, so that's
all right,
that's
so
my question.
This is the way it works. I'm gonna mute just because the audio comes through better for everybody, but I'll probably come back to you to see if you have any follow-up questions. But for now, I'm gonna mute you because Kathy's gonna give you a great answer because I don't really have a great answer. This seems more in your wheelhouse.
Well, you could probably talk about what I do and watching me and how you are helpful to me because, empathic distress and empathic concern, they are different things, but they come from the same place, which is there are some people that can, and I think all people have this capacity. I always have to start by saying that, but there are some people that are a little more raw to the world and they tend to feel more of what they see, hear, read, experience. Sometimes the way that I describe it is it's almost like I'm missing a few layers of skin. Things penetrate a little bit harder. Like I literally, things hurt me. I'm a little more sensitive and I don't mean I shouldn't be. I've accepted these things. I don't think sensitivity is a negative thing. But if I don't, first of all, is recognizing that about yourself, okay, and not being ashamed of it and not thinking to yourself, I should be tougher, I'm weak, or if I was stronger, I'd be able to read more of the news. You got to honor who you are. That's like saying to yourself, if I was only, 5 inches taller, I could play basketball. I mean, it's not something that we can really, take part in. Like we don't get to decide how tall we're going to be. We don't get to decide how many layers of skin we have. Some of us, that empathetic, even though everyone has empathy, some of us are just a little more raw. So I actually, just a quick little side note, last week when Todd and I were in Lake Geneva with our friends, we were talking about the Enneagram. I don't know if any of you guys have done it. Have any of you guys done your Enneagram where you figured out what number you are? Well, it tends to be that usually really empathic people, I'm a two.
The number two,
okay. And a lot of really empathic people are nines. And then there's a lot of empathic people who are all over the board, but I like doing those kind of tests or like figuring out I'm an introvert or figuring out like I'm an INFP, which is my personality type, not because I go around saying it all the time, but because it helps me understand myself. So then I know, getting back to your question, Helen, that I don't want to put myself in empathetic distress, meaning instead of trying to fight through it, I honor who I am. So what does that mean? That means that, and as you know, if you follow our show, I definitely read the news. I feel like I know what's going on. There's times I'd like to put my head in the sand, but I don't. I'm very concerned about people, obviously in my own world and life, but people all over the world. But I have to take breaks from it. I don't watch TV. I don't do visuals. Visuals are really hard for me. I read newspapers. And I listen to podcasts. We never have news on. I can't think of the last time we've had a news station on.
Yes, it doesn't happen. We don't.
Yeah, visually.
I'll check out CNN or something like that online. Mm-hmm. But, and this is, once again, this isn't the right way, but our ways, we don't have the news on our TV.
But it is, you're right. Like some people can watch it and be okay watching it. But I think, Todd could say why he doesn't have it on. He has his own reasons, but I don't do well when I see it because it knocks me down too much and then I can't be of any help to anybody. So that's getting back to your question, Helen, about empathetic concern, is if we get to a point where we're in distress and what ends up happening is we become frozen. and we either say, I'm going to get, you know, I have a lot of friends who are like, I'm getting off Facebook. I'm done. Because they believe if they get off, then somehow all these things go away and they don't have to think about it anymore. I totally honor not being on Facebook. It's social networking, not for everybody, but it doesn't take away what's happening. So what we have to do is, in the midst of crisis, which we've had a lot, either in our own homes or in the world, we do need to look, but then we need to take breaks. And we need to make sure that we are grounded and connected. We need to go outside. It's interesting, today on Twitter, there was this great thread, and Todd and I will post this in the email, and it was from a CIA agent. And she posted it this morning after, you know, there was another shooting yesterday. And she posted it this morning about what CIA agents have learned about emotional or empathetic distress. Because CIA agents can't look away, right? But they also, if they're not careful, they can lose themselves. So she posted this long thread about how you need to take care of, how CIA agents take care of themselves. So I'll post it for you guys. Uh-oh. Where are we going?
Keep talking. People can still hear.
Can you still hear?
Yes.
So that is what I can offer you, Helen. It's not a, I don't have... You know, it kind of comes back to what we always talk about on the show, which is self-care is not just about, what happened there?
Dave shared his screen, but that's okay.
Oh, that's all right, Dave. No worries. Self-care is not just about, you know, taking a quick break. It's about really recognizing when you can no longer tolerate what you're hearing, seeing, or experiencing, and realizing you need time alone, or you need, like, one of the shows we did about 2 or 3 weeks ago was with Karen Brody, Yoga Nidra. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys listened to it, but Yoga Nidra is really one of those ways that we can take a break and literally take a yogic nap and go deep into ourselves and find the reserves to go back out in the world and do things from a place from empathetic concern rather than distress. Because the other thing, the last thing I'll add, Helen, and then Todd will unmute you, is when we are in empathetic distress, we aren't helpful to anybody, even when we think we are. I've actually just been learning this in the last week, is that when I'm in fear and I'm trying to help someone from a place of fear, I'm not helpful. I'm actually kind of a mess, and the other person can tell. So that is my job. To be conscious of that, not shaming, like, oh, I shouldn't feel this way, but be conscious of when I need a break. So
I have one comment, and then I want to read something that Sarah just wrote in the chat box, and then we'll unmute Helen. So I'm always about, like, what can I do? And some of the things that you can do is what Kathy just said, which is, you know, don't watch the news or all that. But, like, I'll give you an example. Like, when our president removed out of the Paris Agreement, you know, you think of, like, oh my God, the environment's going to hell in a handbag, and now he did this, and it's something I disagree with. And, like, what can I do to help this environment? Because I can't make us go back into the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. And this is a metaphor for whatever it is that happens to be stressing us out in that moment. I can't make Trump re-sign the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. But when I walk downtown, I can bring a bag and put garbage that's on the grass into the bag, mm-hmm. and throw that garbage away. You're like, well, what's the big deal about picking up a few dozen random pieces of trash on the way? I think there's something magical that happens by the art, by the impact of just
action,
mm-hmm. moving in a direction, even if it's a small direction, because maybe that small gesture of picking up two dozen pieces of trash will get you to motivate yourself to write your congressman, or maybe it'll just make you feel better about it and make you more equipped to deal with whatever it is that's going on. So no matter how big your problem is, maybe it's like, whatever, I can't stand my dad and I don't have the strength to tell him I love him because I'm so pissed at him. Can you, like, say a prayer to get the strength to someday get there? Like, just do something small, because our brain is hardwired to look at what's missing sometimes or what's going wrong. And it takes some awareness, some self-awareness, to be able to step outside of that you know, pattern that our ego kind of traps us in, and just get something moving in the right direction.
I think that's great.
Oh, thank you,
sir. I do, because that's the one thing that I definitely left out was I was talking about your own self-care, but service is huge and it can be big or small.
And Sarah says about being empathic. By the way, I don't know the difference between empathic and empathetic.
It's the same.
Why do we have to have two words?
Potato, potato. You say potato.
I say potato. You say tomato. I say tomato.
Potato.
Potato.
Tomato.
I was going to say the second
one. When Skylar and I sing it, we sing the whole thing together.
I know.
Let's call the whole thing off.
When Harry Met Sally. It's a great movie.
Well, and that song.
Do you know When Harry Met Sally is like 22 years old?
Yes, let's not discuss.
It's crazy. Anyways,
so old. I was looking for a red suede pump.
Sarah says about being empathic, when you talk about how emotional you are, I feel so similar. Mm. I really look up to you because you seem like a high-functioning version, a best possible version of the emotional levels I deal with. So, all right.
Well, that's very nice. But remember, it's a little bit like TV. You don't see me crying in the morning.
I do.
You do.
I see you.
That's the thing is, guys, the worst case, and I appreciate the compliment and I'll take it because what I do is when I do cry in the morning, I figure it out and I focus on it and I relieve it and I go to my therapist and I ask for help. So I do believe I will accept that compliment, but I don't want you to think that I'm always good, because that would be not a good message to send.
I can vouch for that.
And what I believe in is that the pain that comes up for me needs to come up. There's a reason for it. It's not always true, but that I would much rather deal with what's coming up and tell the truth about it than deny it, numb it, repress it. I just can't do that. I'm not capable.
And one more thing before I go back to Helen, just to see if she has any thoughts. Millie, one of our favorite teachers who's on the team, she says, this discussion makes me think about the podcast I listened to last night, Oprah's Super Soul Conversation with Maria Shriver.
Yes, that was so good.
They brought up a Rumi quote about widening our gaze. Mm-hmm. Instead of just focusing on the thing that's causing you to be challenged, widen your gaze and look at the bigger picture. When viewed from the larger perspective, usually the situation doesn't seem as bad. So yeah. With that, I'm going to move over to Helen. Helen, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just wish that type of information was a little bit more widely known, because I felt like so weird, and it was 8 years before I realized there was a name for it, and it was really, you know, it was normal. It was just a sort of a, like you were saying, Kathy, it was a more extreme version of something. Everybody has a point where it gets too much and they have to turn away. I think the acceptance part, I wrote some of the points down. The acceptance part is huge, and it's really the starting point. And then take breaks. You don't have to overwhelm yourself. Can you share the CIA agent's quote?
I will. Todd's writing it down.
Yep.
Yeah. It'll
be in the show notes.
Yeah, it would be really interesting.
Yeah, I'll email to you because it's really good. And you know what? I agree, Helen. I think that if I could do anything, did it work, Cameron? Oh, Cameron's been making slime and it didn't work.
Anybody know how to make slime? We're not doing.
Wait, there's a wasp in here.
That's okay. He's good.
Okay. If I could do anything for the schools or for children or for adults for that matter, it would be to give them, I can go back to Millie's quote about widen out a little bit to recognize, first of all, how similar we all are. And at the very same time, here's the paradox, how we all experience things differently. And then one person's week is, you know, that it's not, I didn't want to use that word. I'll just say, Helen, I can relate to you because I grew up thinking I was overly sensitive. I was too weak, that I couldn't handle things, that I needed to be quiet about these things because then people would look down on me. I was ashamed. And what I realize now is that what I believe to be my biggest shame is my biggest strength. I mean, I feel everything. And if I didn't, and I don't just mean me, Kathy, but if we as empathetic people didn't, this world would be in trouble. we are, you know, I'll use Glennon's language again. I'll use her because she also identifies as an empath, and this really resonated. She said that empathetic people and people who like her, you know, the language I use is don't have as many layers of skin. They're canaries in the coal mine, where they're the ones who feel this isn't right, or this person's hurting, or why isn't someone looking here, or and we are essential.
Well, and I will add, and I don't know if this translates, but there's that woman who does the TED Talk about introverted people and extroverted.
Susan Cain.
I know we're talking about empathy and not introvertedness, but I feel like that there's a common thread there. Our society rewards extroverted people. Our society rewards non-empathic people.
Yes.
And there are a ton of people out there. Like Kathy is a feeler, like she said. We watched a Netflix thing last night. She was bawling her eyes out. That's what she does. She feels. And we'll talk about that Netflix thing in a second. And I used to feel shame because I wasn't like her.
Right.
I used to be like, oh my God,
What's wrong with me?
I'm numb. What's wrong with me? I now know that if I was like her, we might be in some trouble. And if she was like me, we might be in some trouble. So that there's a balance between the two. So,
and that we need both.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's not that Todd's not a feeler. It's when I am really like struggling and I get lost in like the pain of it all, he can help me get my feet back on the ground. And when Todd is too lost in his head, I will say, dude, you're missing it. You're missing it. Can you not feel this? And then he can. So it's not about one being right or wrong. This is, again, going back to the Rumi quote, we need to expand. We need to see things from a, you know, the Rumi quote, I think they actually talked about was, you know, there's a field, you guys know the field, you know, there's a field quote by Rumi,
no.
You know, beyond judgment, beyond pain,
oh,
there's this field and I'll meet you there. I'm paraphrasing, but we're all in this together, but we all have different ways of being. And do you guys understand why when people start to judge, and again, I know you guys know this if you're on Team Zen, but when people start to judge people because they're skin color or religion or their sexual preference or their gender identity, what the hell? Like, everybody has a different way. And the more that we can expand and understand that, and that there isn't one way, the more free we all are, the more all of us can be who we are. I just wrote something last night about the challenge that we have in this country, and also just in our own families and everywhere, is projection. And I don't know if you guys know what projection is, but in the clinical term, in the clinical definition, projection is when the pain, discomfort, shame that we feel, sometimes it's subconscious, unconscious, sometimes it's very conscious. We feel it, and because we're unwilling to deal with it, we project it onto other people. So it's like we take all of our pain and we throw it at other people and we say, it's you, you're the problem. And we say, they are the problem. And if they would leave, we would be safe. And the truth is, that's all our internal fear and pain. We can't run from it, but we do. And then that's where all the hatred comes for, you know, comes where we direct it at other people and other groups. And that's why, to me, and I don't mean this to be like, oh, I'm so wise to this, but it's so transparent to me when someone hates. When someone hates, they're in pain. They're unwilling to look at their pain. They'll say, no, I'm strong. I see it. I get it. I've got 10 degrees. I've got my doctorate. I'm so smart. I have all this knowledge. You're in pain. If you're hating, and again, I say this from the other side too, when I'm hating, if I'm angry, what is it that I'm struggling with? And I don't mean it's all mine. There are people who deserve the frustration, but then it goes back to loving kindness and compassion, because then I'm carrying around their pain and I don't want to. Sorry, go ahead.
Said in another way, if you spot it, you got it.
Yeah.
And then there was the Rumi quote.
Yeah.
Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there
in that field.
So we'll meet you guys at the field.
Meet you in the field. Let's just live in the field. Let's just be there. Let's all build houses in the field.
No, I think we should visit the field, but I don't want to live in the field.
I want to live in the field.
The field seems like I'd be bored.
I wouldn't be bored.
There's no sports.
I would read all my books that are next to my bed.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be in the field of non-judgment forever if I could. That's because it's painful for me, Toddy.
I know. And you could, I'll visit you in the field.
Okay.
I don't want to live there. She wants to move to a farm.
I want to raise alpacas.
Well, I don't.
And I want to have a sloth, but that'd be dangerous. So we're not going to do that.
Three toes.
They're dangerous, but they're so cute. And then I want to have a really old bulldog.
Kimmy wants to live in the field.
I do. I'll live there with you. We'll build little A-frame houses. And then I can wash my face at night. I'm not camping in the field.
The weird thing, though, is she doesn't like to go camping with
me. No, I want to be in a house in the field. I want to be able to get in the refrigerator. I don't want to grill, or I don't want
to
like...
Sweetie, do you want to walk to another place of the campsite to wash your face before you go to bed?
I just want my own sink in the field. I don't want a... I don't want to like use water from a, you know, bucket or something.
There's no buckets at campground, sweetie.
Whatever.
All right.
The last thing I want to say about the Maria Shriver interview that Millie's talking about, which we'll also put on the notes, is she talks about yippee moments, which I really loved, and I wrote that down. That, and again, this is just another way of leaning into joy, you know, the language that we use. But when you're having a moment like, you know, where you get a phone call from somebody or a song comes on the radio or you get a great email, that you can actually say, yippee! Like, don't let it go by. I've been talking to my youngest daughter about that. Like, we've been talking about leaning into joy and how when something comes up that we love, say yippee. And the reason, I don't care what words you use, you don't have to say yippee. You can say yay or whatever, but it acknowledges it, that it's happening.
I have three comments.
Okay.
Kimmy says, I could live in the field.
Yay! More in the field.
But the second part she says is, sweetie, she has a bulldog.
Yeah!
She loves bulldogs.
Let's be next door neighbors.
Those bulldogs always look uncomfortable.
One time, I've never been able to have dogs because I'm a bit allergic. My sister was allergic when I was growing up, and my daughter, JC, is allergic. So one time, when I was a little girl, there was our neighbors next door had a dog, and he was always like chained up outside. I know that's not probably cool now, but when I was growing up, that was kind of the way. And one time, I just took him, and I just left, and they couldn't. His name was Funky, and they couldn't find him, and they couldn't find me. And when I got back, they're like, you can't take people's dogs. I'm like, but he wanted me to.
Sweetie, Sarah says, I would live in the field, but I want a bathroom.
Me too. Thus, yeah,
they don't have bathrooms in fields. You can't have it both ways, guys.
We can build in the field.
Is there called outhouses?
No. In the field, we can just do a little bit of real estate development.
And then Dave says his brother used to live in a tree.
Wow.
That sounds challenging.
You know, you can't do plumbing in a tree.
No plumbing in the tree. All right. So
So can we talk about this really quick? I know people have questions.
Yes.
But, okay. Who here has seen Hannah Gadsby's comedy special?
Just me.
Okay. So everybody, I have good, fun homework for you. Hannah Gadsby is a comedian.
Never heard of her before this thing.
Australia, I believe. She's from Tasmania, but she moved to Australia. So this was, we watched it last night. A bunch of people told me to. I got emails from so many people saying you need to do this.
That's her.
Basically, it's a comedy special that is, it's actually, I thought it was totally like that I don't like to oversell, but it's kind of a masterpiece because you have no idea what you're getting into.
I don't think it's a masterpiece. I think it was amazing. The first 20 minutes, and I know there's a purpose behind
it. There's a purpose.
I put it this way. I was ready to turn it off after 20 minutes, and Katie's like, hold on, because a bunch of listeners or Team Zen people
and
said,
some of my friends, yeah,
check this out. So we trusted you, and we watched the whole thing, and I'm very grateful because there is something going on in this woman's explanation of how she views the world that is magical.
That's why it's a masterpiece.
Godlike, pretty nuts.
Great.
In a good way.
So it's about 1 hour and 9 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's not really for, teenagers can watch it, but not young kids. There's a lot of language, well-used language, necessary language. But if you're getting 10 minutes in and you're like, I don't get it, stick around.
Yeah.
It's necessary that you see
the beginning. There's a purpose behind it.
Yeah. So that's it. That's our request.
We're going over to our friend, Jennifer. Hi, Jen.
Hey guys. I'm on my phone, not my laptop. So I'm feeling a little disoriented because I can't operate things. Like I can't chat, or I could, but it's too complicated. So first of all, I just want to say thank you to everybody, because I feel like I come on here a lot and unload a lot of stuff, and you guys are always very supportive and helpful, and it means a lot to me because I really don't have a strong support group where I live. So there's times where I feel really alone, and this group makes me feel really good. So just thank you to everybody for that. My main issue kind of relates to the topic I talked about with my issue with my mom. And the reason it relates is because when I was younger, my mom didn't meet my emotional needs. So one of my important goals of parenting is to meet my kids' emotional needs. And I feel like I've done that pretty well with two of the three of my kids. So the one son, I have a teenage son who's almost 16, and I have twin boys that are almost 12. One twin had open heart surgery, and he had a lot of physical problems, and when he was a baby, and developed, he's very highly sensitive, and he developed an anxiety disorder and missed a lot of school. The other twin was totally healthy physically, and was like a really relaxed, like laid back baby and little boy. And over the past few years, he has gotten really intense, emotionally intense, but in a not really enjoyable way to be around. So I took him to a therapist. I go to therapy. My other twin goes to therapy now, the second twin. So Andrew goes to therapy. So I'm big into therapy. I believe it like totally helps. I feel like I alone couldn't help my kids, and it was great. So he was diagnosed with oppositional defiant disorder, but not because he really is that, because kind of like what Kathy says all the time, that they need something to put on the insurance form. He's not necessarily defiant. He's just very impulsive and hot tempered, and he gets very angry. And the main reason I started taking him to therapy is because, you know, he was 9 years old and still hitting a lot. So if he would get really angry, he would get violent and hit. And that was the thing that I couldn't control. And, you know, I would explain to him that anger is okay, that anger isn't a necessary emotion, but that he couldn't hurt other people or destroy other people's things. So because he doesn't do that out in the world. Like, he doesn't go to school and hit. He doesn't go to a play date and hit. But he does do it a lot at home. So long story short, we've gotten, the hitting is less. There's still a lot of threatening of hitting. But when he's good, he is like such an amazing, amazing boy to be around. Like, he's full of love and light. But when that switch turns and he gets angry, it's like it's almost like he has two personalities. So the point of my question is, that we had switched therapists because of our insurance, and this therapist basically said, you know, he really doesn't want to be here. He really doesn't want to talk about what's bothering him. And so she's done a lot of like anger management things with him, and tools for calming down and things like that. But ultimately, I think that there's kind of what you guys were just talking about, that there's his anger comes from a place of pain, deep pain, and we're not really sure what that's coming from. And he is a very like coordinated and athletic and strong boy, but he can go out and play with the boys, but he doesn't like doing that. He likes being with the girls. He likes knitting. He likes weaving. He likes drawing, coloring, dancing, singing. And I think that probably around the time where his anger started was when society kind of started saying, wait a second, you're a boy, so why are you doing all these things? So I think there's some discomfort there. You know, he at school, he sits with all the girls at lunchtime. He has a book club with the girls. At recess, he plays with the girls. So there's definitely a judgment that goes on in elementary school. The boys are like, why are you doing that? But then there were some other things that have come up, and I thought, well, maybe it's just that, or maybe he in some ways, I know he's not a sexual being yet, but maybe he's gay, maybe he's this. So we don't really know where it's coming from, but I guess the point of my question is, I am feeling really distressed at the fact that I can't break through whatever is going on with him. I feel like I am now really letting him down because I have always prided myself on being emotionally connected with my kids. And I feel like I'm really emotionally disconnected with him. And in talking to my therapist about it, she'd say, you know, but you're really not, because, you know, we snuggle, we read books, we hug, we kiss, we, you know, like we're very, I'm very close to him, but I just feel like there's this wall, and all my little tactics that I try, it's like I can't get through, and it's making me feel like a failure as his mom. So, and I'm also very highly sensitive. So the discussion about being in empathic concern versus empathic distress, I'm definitely in the more distressed place right now. So what should I do with those feelings of distress that right now are overwhelming me and feeling like, oh my gosh, I am so letting him down. It's been over 2 years, and although he's improved, there's still this, whatever this deep pain is, it's still there, and he doesn't know how to deal with it. And it becomes very unpleasant in our family because he lashes out a lot. You could be playing a game and he lashes out. You could just be eating dinner and he lashes out. So there's this part of me, probably why I'm feeling more guilty, is there's times where I just don't want to be around him, and I almost don't want him to be around at all because he becomes so unpleasant to be with. And then I think, well, if only I could help him, he wouldn't be this unpleasant. So I don't know if that really explains it. And there's probably more I could say, but I'll just leave it there and see what you got for me.
Okay. No problem. And give me, what grade is he going into?
He'll be going into fifth grade.
Okay. I'm going to mute you, and I'm going to let Sweetie talk.
Oh, you didn't want to say anything?
You start.
Okay. Well, I think a few things. I think that there is not so, it's almost like you got to restructure the way you're looking at this. Because you don't get to solve this for him.
As much as you want to, you're not going to be able to.
And he has resilience and tools that he came in with, just like you did, and just like everybody else on this call, and just like every other person in this world. And he has that inside of him. But sometimes at that age, they're kind of fighting through it, meaning it's uncomfortable and they don't have the tools yet, and they don't know, they don't have enough experiences to know it gets better. They don't know, you know, a lot of times, like now when I struggle with something, I've struggled so many times in my life that even though I don't like the pain, I know it's going to get better because I've had that experience a million times. Kids that age haven't had enough life experience to know. They believe this is the way life is. This will always be unfair. I will always feel this way, which isn't true. But it's all, they're too young. And the thing I try and remember with all my girls when they're struggling is that, A, I'm going to be there, meaning I'm going to show up just like you are. I'm going to listen. I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to talk to them. But the truth is they have what they need to get through it. I'm not going to be the one to get them through it.
And that doesn't mean that he's not going to get through it without struggle either. Struggle,
of course,
that's
what getting through it means.
Right.
Is that, like, I love all the tools you've put in place. He's got a therapist. You guys are open about it. He, you know, there's, and again, this doesn't lessen the challenging moments, but we have to kind of remember what we know. Because a lot of times we know things about ourselves, but we don't apply it to anybody else. We're like, I can get through struggle, but they can't. And that's not true. They come from the same source we do. They've been watching us. They just haven't there for the first time, you know, and especially I thought the reason I thought Todd would want to talk is with your son, like you said, he for the first time is going through the experience of what does it mean to be a boy? What does it mean to be a man? It may have something to do with his sexuality. It may have nothing to do with his sexuality, but it's painful sometimes because he's not always seeing himself reflected. Mm-hmm. And it's less about you, Jen, and you being like, I'm going to solve this. I'm going to come to his rescue. And more about you supporting him and witnessing him and reminding him that he's going to get through this, that you're all going to get through this.
And that he's going to be loved regardless of, you know, his challenges or how he copes with his challenges. Mm-hmm. 'Cause every single one of us had our share of challenges. Yeah. And his are, you know, it'll unfold.
It'll unfold.
I would say stay present with it. Mm-hmm. Don't get ahead of it. Mm-hmm. Really easy to get out of it. Mm-hmm. Don't overinflate it. Just treat it for what it is. Continue to seek out support. Obviously, you have this community that you're talking on right now. You have a therapist. So you're doing a lot of these things. And, you know, you guys chose each other. Like, there's a reason that you're his mom. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the paradox. You're his mom and you're not going to be able to fix it, but my gosh, he's so lucky to have a mom that is working on herself and filling her own tank and accepting of whoever he is. I don't know about the rest of you, but you know, my parents weren't always the most accepting of people, the most accepting type of people, depending on what I chose to do with my friends or whatever. So, the fact that he has a mom that's like you, and I know you well enough, Jen, to be able to say that with authenticity, like, you can't fix him, but my gosh, he's pretty lucky to have you.
And you're not alone. All kids go through those struggles. We go through those struggles. We experience that, you know, like, this isn't like, oh, my kid, like mm-hmm. all kids, we all did, mm-hmm. you know, like I've actually just in my own therapy been talking a lot about my fourth and fifth grade year in school and how hard it was. And I've been sharing that with my daughter. So it's not, and again, sometimes we say, yeah, you had it hard, but mine is harder. And you may feel that way because you're the one experiencing it. But I think there are certain ages where it, because of brain development, things, it's a little, you know, it's like we go 7, 8, 9, and then 10, 11. You know, like it's a little more challenging. And then maybe in our teenage years, we're like, okay, back to 15, 16, and then 18, 20, do you know what I mean? Like, and it's different for every kid. I'm not, for those of you who are like, no, my kid struggled at 15. That's fine too. It's not about that it's specific years, but I think because of brain development and because of growth, certain years are harder to turn over. They're like, this is a harder time because there's more awareness, or we change schools, or you know, they grew tall, or they went through puberty, or we had to move, or their best friend left, or, you know, and so then those years are a little more challenging. But then, you know, what I really try and sit with all the time in myself is that these challenges, that's what makes us who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't like it. I don't like pain.
Nor should you like it.
No.
But it's like accepting the discomfort of the situation.
It makes us who we are.
All right, I'm unmuting Jen. Jen, what do you think?
I totally agree that I am not being present and that I'm getting ahead of myself. And I think because he's been struggling for a couple years now, and it hasn't always been the same. It's been up and down, but when I was listening to the podcast this week, and although he, you know, doesn't have autism or anything diagnosed neurologically, like in terms of being differently wired with his preferences, that he likes more things that are associated with girls than boys. As I was listening to the podcast and you guys were talking about being an expert on your child, and I just started feeling like, oh my gosh, I guess I'm not an expert on him. And wow, like that's terrible that I have two kids I feel like I'm so connected with and one that I'm not. But basically, I think what I'm getting from you guys is that it's not that I'm not connected with him. It's just I have to kind of hold the space for him to struggle, be in it with him, and not feel like his struggle means it's my failure, that his struggle is my failure.
Right. And I even want to comment on the being an expert on your child, because it's so interesting. Like, I know exactly what you mean about you hear that, and then we take that through our own filter and we make it mean something that it doesn't. Because when I say that, my children know them, you know, I try to get to know my girls as best as I can, and I like to ask some questions and be with them. But there's no way I'm going to know everything. Like, there's no way, because sometimes when they come to me with challenges, I didn't know that that was challenging them. So obviously, expertise is not about having all the information all the time. It's about being willing to listen and be open and continue. Because, you know, right now, my daughter, who is 15, she was a lot different when she was 12. And my daughter, who was about to turn 11, was a lot different when she was 8. We got to, like stay with them as they grow and become an expert, not in we know everything about them all the time, but we're willing to keep paying attention and keep, that's what expertise is, right? It's not about having all the information all the time and being like, I'm on top of it. I'm in control of them. I'm not in control of any of my children. My children have their own lives. I'm,
you know, experiences, and that's how they, you know, that's how we all learn, is through our struggles.
I'm not quite sure I'm in control of myself sometimes.
And it's really hard to sit in that.
Yeah.
It sucks. We just don't want, you know, these precious beings that we help bring into the world. You don't want them to struggle, but then if they don't, it's whatever. It's the lobster. It's the cocoon.
They got to break out of the shell.
They got to break out of it. And then they'll settle in, and then they'll feel good. And then they'll have a bad experience at school, and then they'll get, you know, they'll withdraw again. Like, it's a dance. It's a dance.
Yeah.
Are we going to fight with this discomfort, or are we going to dance with it? And depending on what mood I'm in, sometimes I feel like dancing, and other times I want to like just go away and not deal with it.
But yeah, I really do want to comment on, if there's anything for all of you who listen to the show or the podcast or read things that other people write that may have nothing to do with us, if you read something that feeds your shame, you're reading it through the, or unless this person's trying to feed your shame, like if you're, you know, if you're listening to our president or something like that, and it's making you feel bad, it's because he's trying to feed your shame. But if you are listening to people who you know care about you, and or trying to, you know, and you hear something that you're like, oh, I'm doing it wrong because they said it, question that, because I, you know, especially that's something that there's no way I can be all over everything we say, but sometimes we get emails from people who said, you said this, and, you know, this hurt me, and this is like the last thing we ever want to do, is that there is no right way. There is no, you know, you should be doing this or you're doing it wrong. What we're trying to say is the field, you know? So Jen, if you ever hear us, and not just the show, but anybody that, you know, cares about you and you're like, oh my God, they're right, I'm doing it wrong. There's you know, that our shame got a hold of that and took that to demonstrate that we really are doing it wrong.
Well, and I would say radical self-care. Like when we're challenged, sometimes we want to, like, if we're depleted, we will be like, no, I got to like help this person at my own expense. Or you got to like, you know, read these books so you can be more empowered to help your son. And I would say balance that out with, like, because what your son needs is a mom who's got gas in the gas tank. You know what I mean? All right. I'm going to unmute Jen, and then we'll probably close shop. What do you got, Jen?
I think that, I mean, you're right, Kathy, like that there was this trigger in my head with, and it all kind of came together. Like, it was almost as if the podcast came at the right exact time, because I think it was feeding my shame, but then a way of helping me recognize that, it's a trigger for me. Like, I know that my mom was never even close to an expert on me. But that's different than the way I'm feeling about my son right now. And then I have to separate those things. So I think it was a really useful thing to come up at this time. And when we think about signs, I know that a lot of us believe in signs. And I was talking about this with some friends at the pool, and I wasn't feeling like they were really getting it. And I was kind of feeling like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be talking about this. And then I looked up, and there was this woman who had this bag, and it had a big yellow smiley face on it. And my dad was known for his smiley face. He started this organization called Smile International, and the motto was Smile for Love, Brotherhood, and Peace. And he started it the year I was born, in 1971. So I have smiley faces everywhere. And it was like in that moment looking up and he was saying to me like, everything's going to be okay. So I kind of feel like all this, all these different things came together. And so I think there was purpose to the podcast. Like that it didn't, it brought the, up that shame, but in a good way for me to work through it. Yes. So I thought the woman was so amazing, and there was a part of me that was like, gosh, I wish I could be more like her. Wow, she figured out her kid and I haven't figured out mine. So yes, I went down that path.
And you know, it's interesting, Jen, because I think what Debbie was trying to say was I have to figure out my kid every day. I think what Debbie's message is in her book is not I got it, but that Asher changes every day. And so her job with, you know, a kid who, as she says, differently wired, is that she's going to change her idea of understanding people, and that she has to constantly question him and ask him and watch him. So her expertise isn't about got it, sealed the bag, got it, but that it's a constant process.
Yeah, we spent a little bit of time with her before and after the interview, and believe me, she would admit she don't got nothing.
Yeah, and that, and none of us do. That's the point, is that those are the things that make us feel good. And I think we do have egocentric moments where we say, this kid is like this, and this kid is like this, and this kid is like this, and I know exactly what they need and exactly what they need. And maybe sometimes we do for that moment, and we can lean into that joy, but it won't always be that way. You know, that's like me saying, I know everything there is to know about Todd. I don't need to know anymore. I don't need to ask any questions. He just needs to stay the same. That's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, just know that you're not alone. I struggle with this too.
Yeah, normalize. Mm-hmm. So a few quick comments from Kelsey, which are really good. To Jennifer, you're totally an expert on child, evidenced by the intro and explanation to your question that you gave. You wouldn't be able to speak so deeply and sensitively about what's going on if you weren't an expert on him. Being an expert on your child doesn't mean knowing what the problem or the solution is.
Correct. Good, Kelsey. That's great.
She goes on to say, I think of it more as being attuned, as attuned as I can in any given moment. Attachment theory says that we only need to be attuned correctly 30% of the time, and the rest of the time it's about coming back and reconnecting when we have a misattunement, that we keep showing up. And I totally see Jennifer doing this.
Great. Attunement. So, that's a great word.
So we're an hour in, so we're going to close shop, guys. We have another Zen Talk planned for Friday the 13th.
Ooh, creepy. It'll be a creepy one.
Happy middle of the summer. Fourth of July, except for you Brits, because that's when we got away from you.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry about that.
As far as the Facebook page, you know, I know it's summer, so not as many people are on it. And I just, you know, feel free to keep asking questions, send emails. If there's a question on there, I do my best to answer it. Sometimes I'm not on social networking every day, just because it's summer and I'm, you know, the schedule is different than it used to be. Todd usually gets a notification that someone has said something, so I will get to it. But anyway, just email, and, you know, I hope we can, you know, sustain through the summer. And
conference announcement in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think our conference, so we have all of our speakers for the conference, and it's really great, and you're going to want to be there. Oh, sure. And I think our conference theme is Get Your Brave On.
Sweetie, don't tell them.
Yes, I'm telling them.
No.
I just did, so I can't take it back. The reason why I'm telling you guys is because I need to be saying it, because we were kind of going with something more soft and gentle, and I'm just sorry. We just got to get our brave on. And I don't mean just like in the world, you know, it's not just a political thing. It's like everywhere. We just got to, do it. We got to like speak, and we got to take care of each other, and we got to like connect and practice self-care and love each other. And it's really brave. So get your brave on, Todd.
Yeah.
Do you think that was a secret? Do you think I made a mistake?
Well, the best part is if you made it, it's your company. She owns 51% of ZPR. So
no one will fire me?
So you can't get fired. That's the greatest part about it.
Get your brave on.
I only own 49%.
Correct.
How do I get that extra percent?
I'll never give
it up. Come
on. I'll never give it up.
All right, guys, if there's anything we could do to support you, enhance your experience of Team Zen, please let us know. If you have friends that you think might be a good fit, tell them about it.
And watch the Hannah Gadsby
Yes.
Netflix. And then also go see the Mr. Rogers movie. I'm taking my girls tonight. Sky, are you ready for Mr. Rogers?
Yeah.
She's like, if you buy me popcorn,
yes.
I'm going. Yes.
With butter.
Without butter.
She doesn't like butter on her popcorn.
You guys can share a butter. You guys can share popcorn.
Yes. And candy.
And candy.
I can't wait to spend $14 on something that should cost $3.
Yes.
Okay, we'll buy it at the store.
We'll sneak it in. We sneak it into our movie theater.
Is a rule breaker.
That's right. That's what we do.
I love you guys.
All right, guys. Adios, muchachos and muchachas.
Thanks for your patience, baby.